Bundyville, the living room, room to live, to live. Fear and Loathing left Las Vegas storming the one-horse town of Bundyville. The devil be damned. Buy the ticket. Take the ride. There's no turning back now. We'd be fools not to ride this strange torpedo all the way out to the end. With hurricane force determination, Leah and Ryan set the tom-tom course for the fear and beyond the fabled unknown. Loathing led them on. Perhaps it was the iconic silence of clasped hands and an affirming look that sealed their resolve to drive straight into the desert and prepare to never come back. Maybe it meant something. Maybe not. In the long run, but no explanation, no mix of words or music or memories can touch that sense of knowing that you were there and alive in that corner of time and the world, whatever it meant. Hunter S. Thompson, Fear and Loathing, in Las Vegas. Thelma and Louise must have been looking back in the rearview mirror. Well, in Raoul's ride, they would have been anyways. History is hard to know because of all the hired bullshit. Maybe they just wanted to be in control of their of the way their story ended.
Boom. It's quite a story, and a little inspiration today that over the week and two and three and back into time. Anyways, my friend on Twitter, the skater dude, hey, Dave, appreciate the inspiration. So I kind of took it to a screenwriter's perspective of Leah and Ryan as they, that's Leah Sotelli and Ryan J. Haas, author, part of the authors of Bundyville. We're up to episode 4. So I took that that part out of the, see, she also has a blog, and you'll see it all. Come back over here to the Real Liberty Media podcast page of Ponder Gander, and I'll have a lot of good stuff in there for you guys. So a lot to talk about. And short note, so I want to try to just come off my mind. Now, let me introduce myself. I'm Vincent Easley, the second on the witness list for the Bundys in the Las Vegas trial that is now not going to be recharged for sure. Gloria Navarro has declined the prosecution request to bring back more charges and other charges on the Bundys. But it ain't over, not by a long shot. So today it is, I'll be talking about the podcast, and so there's two different sites, and I do encourage everybody to listen to Leah as she tells her tale, and then go back over to the read. Now, Ryan did an interview, and I'll have to get that, I forgot to pull that up before me. He did an interview, and so they're talking there, and they really chirk it up a little bit. They kind of come in with this fear and loathing, as they tell their story. It's all a setup. You know, first they're trying to, you know, demonize them, and now they're trying to dehumanize them, Clive and Bundy, on their trip up to, Mount Trumbull. So the hurricane force, I played with that. They took their rented a Jeep up in Hurricane. So in the broadcast there, you'll see that, and it'll click on and take you up there. If you ever want to go for a wild ride into the great beyond of the unknown. So I took a lot of her words and put them together into that, which Grim read. And thank you, Grim. That was pretty good. So let me go back to the end of some of my notes here where I can pick up. The other way. Here we go. So. Now, let's go back a little bit here before we carry on. With Navarro deciding not to bring more charges again, I want to go back into some conversation with some of the fellas. Barks at Cats, which he changes his name for his dog, Barks at Coyotes and Barks at Cows. Thanks for the engagement in the conversation, and we are, I think, gaining ground in trying to come together in a conclusions. I said that wrong. come together, where all these streams come together, right, where, and diversion. And that's a big part of what's going on with the mainstream press. And I found this to be the case. As I was there in Las Vegas, you know, I got exposed to all of these people in mainstream media and seeing what they write about all of this and how they slant it. Now, the little story there that inspired Thelma and Louise and the Fear and Loathing, they do, in fact, exhibited this, the loathing in her podcast and in the publication. Just an outright loathing. And their fear, you know, she talks about being afraid, you know, fearing the Bundys. And then after seeing him in his living room, which is a title of the fourth episode from Long Reads. Excuse me, just a sec. Running out of air there, something to wash it down with. Fear. Yeah, she's afraid and also dishonest. And by the way, thanks for listening, or at least looking in here, Ryan. You made comment in that interview you did about we was watching, some of us at least, and you have to be referring to me, Mike Stickler, and Kelly Stewart, at least. I don't know any other three that I've seen, so maybe if you'd be more clear and, you know, just outright say who it is you're talking about. Let's not hide things. Let's have honesty. You know, just like when you said you didn't know about the Nay book, Leah, and then you did. I'm just talking to Michelle, I'm sorry, Melissa Louder and B. Louder. You did know. You've mentioned your deceptive behavior two or three times that I've picked up on so far, up to the fourth part. And you're out for a story, and you're creating your own story. You want to be the hero of your own story. So unlike Maxine Burstein for the Oregonian, who has definitely changed over the last 2 years in her writing capacity and how she presents this story, and she's going more with, you know, plain facts and has gone a long ways from when she started of being very biased in, you know. So if you're going to do an opinion piece, just say it's an opinion piece. But you're proselytizing or attempting to people into your theology, which is this extreme environmentalism. Now, I've got to stop and say, I realize that being a millennial, where's my notes on that in a separate one here? I was talking about on the local news here in, out of Little Rock about millennials. And I want to find that link too and include it. But so there's good and there's bad coming from the millennials, in my opinion. But there is a lot of good, a lot of awareness. But I realize too that, I mean, you guys were born about the time that this, what you're talking about, this, I'll have to come back to that, where the, you call them an extreme environmentalist group, about the No Move in 92 and Cattle Free in 93. Trying to separate that away from the ideology of the BLM's policy. But remember, those policies have been driven and changed and redirected due to lawsuits like from the Center for Biological Diversity. So a lot of convolution in your tale. And in the blog, in part four of your blog there, you really, really move towards dehumanizing Clive and Bundy, separating them even from their own clan, as you might call them. So not very fair. It's not true journalism. It's an opinion, and it's very, very biased. So let's see here. Now, let me talk to this. Will tie in very well. War and Other Things to Do by Tuesday. That's DZ Bill Fulton on Twitter. And he was the, he was undercover FBI, informant against Schaefer Cox. I'm going to get his book. I'm going to get the ebook for about $5 and read it, but it'll probably be a month or so from now, past what I'm working on now. But anyways, this I heard, crimes are solved by people talking more so than the forensic evidence. Now, I've got to add to that. This is, I say, created too. Inside Bill's book, I'll find how, alcohol was used, just like with Doug, I'm sorry, I forget your name there. Blank. Got 68 years. Greg Burleson, I'm sorry, Greg. 68 years for, they got him drunk, and he said what some things that he would do, would like to do, or had hoped it would have been done. So the blood of patriots is the title of Bill Fulton's book, and I'm in contact with Chuck O'Chelly. I want to bring that when I'll have to make contact with the public relations guy there to get in the future interview Bill, and let's get the slant from that side and how the FBI works. I've talked about a few FBI informants, and I told many of the Bundys and other people in my travels this last year, and they're in Nevada, up into Utah, Nevada, California. Guard your words. You know, you have to expect that what you're saying is going to be heard and be used against you. Hal tries to help for positioning oneself in avoiding this, this jurisdiction that'll roll you over. People have been fighting in so many ways, like Bruce Doucette. He's the rest of his life in prison. It's a winning hand for the government generally, and most times when you get in federal court, you're done. So back to that screenwriting idea. Thanks, Gator Dude. Wisecrack. Follow them along. Do a search. Some pretty good stuff in reviewing how I suppose culture style. You've heard art follows life, or is it vice versa? Well, Wisecrack and Script Notes, some pretty interesting blogging. You can search them out, or I'll be including links into this podcast. So we're streaming through YouTube right now, and then it'll come back into a format where the great Mighty Grimner will bring it back to the podcast page, and we'll have a lot of interesting things there that you can follow out and check it out. So thanks, Gator Dude. Dave, you're pretty awesome. We've been talking, and something I'm trying to work on is called Graze It, Log It, or Watch It Burn. It's a catchphrase, and somebody's asked me to write 500 words on this, and not being a writer, it's really difficult. So I hope to be working on that. We've got three more parts in this review of Bundyville, plus I can see probably a couple of more to sum it up. And I've been concentrating on the podcast, but over in the article that she's written, there's a whole lot more. So as I say, I encourage people to really search it out. And if you're already converted to her way of thinking, then you probably won't see too much wrong in how she portrays this. Yeah, I'm fearing loathing.
Vinny.
Huh?
Yes, you say not being a writer makes it difficult, right?
Yes.
But you're a hell of a talker, so just record what you're saying. Just talk and record it, and then you got it. It's all done. All you got to do is just type it out.
Yeah, I type like I talk.
Just thought I'd throw that in there.
Yeah, well, the part of it is the blog, what's written there, and to really just then come on over into the listening part right here, and that's what Leah and Ryan have done. They've separated writing and then give a little condensed version in the blog, which they've done a pretty fantastic job of all this. and they've had a lot of help. There's definitely money being put in behind this. Their story is being shared by a lot of the mainstream media, and there's no counter. Now, Ryan, you share a lot of the praising reviews, but you've not indicated of anything that I've had to say here. Maybe I don't say it in a good enough way. What? Maybe I don't write it in a good enough way. Maybe I ought to write more right. I don't know. But it is what it is. I don't try to say that I garner the skills of the craft that y'all possess. A lot of, pretty incredible writing. But as Dave Montero told me, that writes for the LA Times, he turns it in and they take it and do with it as they will. Now, as I was saying in that other interview, you guys really churched it up, like Joe Dirt, and Snakes and Sparklers are pretty common, just plain old entertainment. But you've got all the, I wish I'd wrote some of this down, but Joe Dirt said the kitty whistles and the all that good stuff. Great words just to make up and make it sound like, oh, this is really, really something. So when y'all set out on your journey, and that's why I say Fear and Loathing left Las Vegas. Y'all came down. Now, I met you guys there, and well, you looked at me like, oh my God, this, what's he gonna do? Just chop my head off or something? And now Ryan Haas, they talked to me. Both of them young, 20s, and Ryan's a pretty cool cat. Just like that guy Cullen, the photographer for Tay Wiles, nice guy, been to Tibet 5 years, or Mongolia, I'm sorry. This idea of this hippie movement, right? Let's back it up and see where we come into this millennial.
Do you have time for a question here?
Jimmy. Good.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Okay. Frumpy, he says he could ask this later if it's too complicated, but if by some miracle the hearings get teeth, the next layer back will include the Uranium One deal, which is related to Harry Balzac and or Harry Reid and the BLM, etc. So he was wondering if the if the Bundy folks even have a clue about this, if you know.
Yeah. Yes, what some things I do know about, and Cliven had told me that there was some convolution in this this Reid. Of course, Reid is a Vatican and a Mormon, and so there's more of the family, and it was perhaps one of his kin that came in there supposedly and bought some of this land and that hold certain equity within the Virgin River Valley there from. I guess in Mesquite, I'm not sure how far up and down that, or exactly where it is. Who was it? I think it was Fran, or it might have been Mrs. B. Stacy, that gave me some maps and showing some of this. It might not be either one of them two. It might have been Tom Lockevar Stewart's old lady, his wife. Sorry. Anyways. There's a lot of stuff now, a lot of stuff, I'm trying to pull names off the top of my head, though, but there's been a lot written about that, and I have some of it on my blog, and so maybe I'll have to recall to bring that back and show some of this. It's very, 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 very long, and but you can find it at Vince, UCYTV, on WordPress. There's... my mind's blanking on it. I'm trying to pull up your name. I'm sorry, dude. Met you in Vegas, and we was at the trial together. We came out to visit. So anyways, I'm just not somebody over here yakking that has an opinion beyond my own. So considering perspectives is the idea here. And I spend a lot of my time not with Bundy supporters, but the not us poots, as they call us, but with those patties, those people that are ardently against the Bundys. And there is an Arden Bundy, by the way. Arden, hello. So we go back to this quote from Fear and Loathing in Las Vegas of Hunter S. Thompson. history is hard to know because of all the hired bullshit. And that is so true. We get people with the money that are moving society's direction. And the person doing it, like Lynn and Ryan, I'm sure they're very convinced in what they have to say and trying to really emphasize that. And to me, it's just obvious how it's definitely just trying to slant the idea of what Clive and Bundy is and all that happened. The next part five of the series is the followers. So we'll talk about that also as far as some of the folks that was out there. There's a lot of people that I've met, others I got to know later on, and some good folks. And then there's those folks that are learning. We had the Miller killers that fueled a couple of cops in Vegas after they were kicked out of the Bundy Ranch up that way. I have lots to speculate on that, and there's a lot that's been said and some that's known. Firsthand and secondhand, they were camped within 30 feet of me during my weeks in Bunkerville in 2014. And it's actually Riverside. It's not Bunkerville. Bunkerville's several miles back down the road towards Mesquite. So, but there's nothing there except for an old ghost town. And I still haven't finished that review and adding to the Google Maps as a guide. Now, through the podcast, let me back up here. We start out with Welcome and Joy, Nevada Land, and that's what Clive and Bundy's talking about there as Leah moves in to the to the review, saying that he's skeptical of government. No, I actually started one page over. Gone is the tortoise and the cattle, says Clive, or as I like to say it, this tale of the tortoise and the hare, hide and hoof. And talking about home turf, Leah really just like tries to position the Bundys as this really fringe, wacko bunch of whacks like in Waco and Ruby Ridge. Leah says she's obsessed, and this is not the first time I've heard this word, obsessed. Now, what is my position in all of this? I feel like there's a duty and obligation here. Because I did go to stand as witness, and I'm continuing to stand as witness to what's going on out there. A lot of things that I don't know, what I'm not privy to. And as Miss B, Stacy, was giving me some counseling in her observation, and she says, you know, I'm not trying to go up there and insert myself in the middle of it. You know, you see in my videos where I'm hanging back. I've never tried to be interested. And as I told the Bundys, the time for trust is past. There's no, it should be afraid of asking any questions. And this is why, you know, bringing forth like Mama Bear and talking about Melissa Lauder as being FBI informants in the coming with Bill Fulton interview. And hopefully that comes together. I'm pretty sure it would. So, she thinks she knows them, supposed empathy is how she's starting out. She thinks she understands them and the persecution that they've been under, but that is quickly goes away as she goes into her deception and being worried about some questions she might ask, calling the Bundys paranoid. We go back up to Oregon, and I wasn't there. I had intended to go, and logistics prevented it. Melissa asked me what, you know, I told her I'm frugal and, you know, frugal poor boy, and she wants to know my financial status. Well, if you want to know, it's, well, you got my number, call me up, I'll tell you. But it ain't a lot of money, and on my journey, I made sacrifice, and there's a couple of three or four people that actually sent me a little something on the side that really helped in the actual travel expense up there in Denver, and like $40. And then William Wagner sent me $100. Let's see. But anyways, I kind of ran deficit this, getting into about December. So next month I'll be caught up on, my backlog almost. But anyways, back up to Oregon and, John Kilman, that was, Fazio Menaggio, his fake name. I'll definitely want to get Bram Thornton back and talk about some of that up there. This John Kilman, when they bring him in, they track him down and he was really instrumental in, showing how the FBI was, kind of formatting the, activities. So he comes in, he talks like a Frenchie and when he was out there at the Malheur Refuge, he had no accent, but in the courtroom, he said, "I don't understand it too much English." You know, I would get through the Italian, version of impersonations, no matter what the language, you know. Just kidding. So he leads this target practice, blah, blah, just firing rounds like crazy. Part of the brassing that they picked up during the investigation and all this and that. Logging on up there. Now, Hal, he sent word to Sugar Pine. He sent word to the Malheur Refuge through Tom Lacavara. None of it was received. And I'll tell you, out of 9 confessed informants in Malheur, there were several other, but the majority of the occupation was actually FBI informants and no doubt provocateurs, as we see with this Kilman. Which, again, back to names, Kilman, there's so many other names. It's just like, wow, you know, like Judge Spear in Bruce's case up in Denver. And I give an example, but I could go back and make all the funny jokes again about my Stephen Myers, don't ask, don't tell policy, and Dirty Dan loves back. Toward dealings, you know, actual quotes, you know, the my I give in the back door, but there were back door dealings they talk about. So I have a lot of fun as the paraphrase plagiarist and taking a ponder gander. And with the little blog story, I did have fun with that. So she says she gets this funny feeling, and it's not over. Is it over, she says? Hold on. pardon. Is it over? Well, and I made a mistake. I don't remember if I sent you the correction on the date. I said charges dismissed January 10th, but it was the 8th. And then on January the 10th, we met outside the Las Vegas Police Department Metro building there, the Sheriff's Department, where Sheriff Joe is inside, won't come out for talking. Cliven gave a good long speech and when it came for questions, and everybody in the big league media wanted to have their questions answered first of all. I just stepped right up in the middle. Said, "I believe I'll take this." And I said, "It ain't over. Well, we're back where we're starting. What's next?" So as we see what was next, some things is a lot of the speaking engagements. This is They're being proactive and getting beat up about it as some of these land rights council meetings and so forth. So the questions that she wanted to know from Cliven, and she says Ryan Bundy needs the press now, and before that she had on many attempts had requested an audience with the Bundys and had not got any response. Now, back to what I said about no bad questions. Sometimes, you know, you might see how people would formulate their question to, excuse me, to get the answer that they want, stimulus and response type of deal. And so they sit down inside Cliven's living room and invites the man. He's invited a lot of people in, and this idea of trust that I spoke with, to Ryan, to Em, and to Clive, and to Carol. And Miss Carol, I think, probably suffered more than anybody else. Each individual had their suffering, but she, as a mother, and having to endure the suffering of her children and grandchildren that suffered for the loss of their fathers and their grandfather, it was pretty enduring. And I look in the face, I remember the look in the face of Angie, Ryan's, Bundy's wife, and that searching look at me, you know, are you going to come in and betray us too? Are you going to come in and try to make something that, out of something? Just like tried with Carol Bundy's words there in front of the sheriff's department that day, the 10th of January. I gave the Channel 8 the accusation that they did do what they did, and they cut it out, make it want to sound like they want to. And that's what we're seeing inside of all of this. And I warned him, I said, you better not cut this. And so they did air all 45 minutes of their stream during that time. On my challenge, I think. That's why. I really do. So she said that Ryan needs to press now because he's running for governor. Well, they've been very open. They've allowed many, many people to enter their home. I said the first time that their house, which would have been January, February, somewhere in there, when one of the times, the few times I went out to sit there, just to sit and pitch my camp there, my tent.
Hey, I'm gonna give a little shout out to the viewers over there on the YouTube. You got I've Been Here. There says Rock On, Howdy All, and the Dick and Roscoe Show. He said he sent some subs over this week, or sent people our way. And Randy Gibble says, this has everything to do with the Virgin River. Thanks, Vinny.
Hey, Randy, I haven't called to tell you yet, as my announcement of not going on this road trip. I really wanted to, and just for a lot of reasons, I'm going to beg off. But love you, brother. That's a good friend right there, friend for life. I've met a lot of people in this world. And, you know, I'm just not some hick up here in the hills. I've traveled the country all my life. I guess I'm gypsy, but, you know, I almost 20 states this last round, year and a half. And I did it through, you know, having friends and family. All my friends that I stayed with, you know, couch surfing is what you technically call this trip of mine. You know, I've got invite back to stay anytime. One of my friends that I met in 2014 became lifelong friends. Well, I just got to say it like it is, running his mouth to a game warden. And so he wouldn't accept the offers. So he's doing about 3 years for intimidating a federal officer, and I got to go back. And, you know, I tried to warn him, you know, you're going to get in trouble. You're going to get in trouble, you know, running your mouth like this. Your words are held against you. And especially when a cop holds you there for an hour and a half and, you know, silently or outright provoke you, that's what his job's to do, is get you to talk. And, just like Ryan English, the FBI agent, he said of Bruce Doucette, he knew he wanted to talk, so he let him. And that's what happens. It's too bad. I appreciate you guys over there. I've been here. You do a lot. You've done more than, probably single-handedly more than anybody else, about sharing out from Real Liberty Media here. So rock on to you too, bro. Let's see. So we're inside, Clive, and I've set up after we spent a good part of the day, and I didn't record anything, take no pictures, or it wasn't an interview. It was a visit, and so we hung out, and Clive and I with his son-in-law, Clancy. He's the husband of Cliven and Carol's youngest daughter, Stetsy. She's a tough gal. I'm going to tell you what, I didn't know who she was for a long time up there in the courthouse. Going back to saying, you know, I'm not trying to poke into, in personally on people. Excuse me, just a second. pardon me. So I hung out there and around the farm and just about, and Clancy, he says, no, I'm sorry, I'm skipping ahead there. That was my next visit there when I hung out with Andrew Cohen and Cliven, and we rode out all day. And for a while, I'm waiting and for everybody to get together. I'm there with, you know, Ryan and his daughters fixing to head out to go fix some busted piping and you know, from these springs and piping them down to the tanks for the cattle and all the other wildlife that benefit from it. So anyways, I'm out there while he's handling cattle that he's caught up. They set traps, which is a pen and triple wire that go into feed. And so anyways, all these, some of these patties would call feral cattle, which is open range cattle. There was a lot left over after so many people were bought out, the water rights and all that stuff, you know, and Cliven Bundy being the last one, not wanting to be managed out of business, he declined to renew his contract with BLM, stopped paying grazing fees, which is not $1 million, as they say. It's it was about $8,000 at the time that he sent him a check for about $6,000, and it's somewhere, but not to the BLM. So in this cattle count, I asked Cliven, I said, how do you know how many cows you got? And he goes, oh, we get something from the BLM, and they're pretty generous in their count, you know, that grazing unit that they charge. And so there was supposed some near 1,000 cattle out there, and I think Cliven might have claimed to 300 or something. And that is welcome and enjoy the Nevada land. We're talking about this public land here where Cliven's been running cattle for a very long time. And of course, all that started to change in the 90s and in the 70s when the FLTMA, which is one strange critter, it come along. We'll move forward and we'll talk some about that here in a minute. Dick Carver and making a stronger stand, like Cliven Bundy was talking about. But we go back to Leah in the living room and talking about how Cliven became skeptical of government. And as a kid, you know, these nuclear testing and, you know, land issues as a kid was, you know, instilled into her. She goes into like, say how Cliven is you know, pounding in this ideology of this reciprocity, this idea that they are special, front, the protectors of the Constitution for God. Now, they may have, well, obviously, I would say they do have this belief, but is that a bad belief to say that you want law and justice and not be conflated to cause degradation to yourself? Something that you've been doing, making a living out here, and the idea that cows are wrecking this. Now, part of my study here and looking at this grazing, to graze it, log it, or watch it burn. You know, there's wildfires across deserts too, and this happens because of many reasons. And I want to look at that more closely and try to bring a story to that. Now, most of what I find, especially on YouTube, is it's kind of a blanketed to say how destructive the cattle are. There is definitely a place, but there's also some places that they don't need to be. And I think just like, you know, good fences make good neighbors, the same thing can apply to like where there's petroglyphs and people going there and damage it. There's some claim, I think, of Shauna Cox, I think it was. Somebody tried to claim that she damaged something. I stole that. I don't remember the rest of the story, but anyway, so land issues and then talking about fees and rights. And the fees ended up, you know, were really to manage them out of business and changing the rules of when cattle can be in certain areas and stuff. There's hundreds and hundreds of acres out there. So fences are not necessarily a fix-all, but there is places for them. Now, I'll tell you how, and I covered this back, Don't Fence Me In was one of a prior broadcast about fencing laws and stuff, and how it is a responsibility on open range that you fence out the cattle yourself. Now there's certain standards that that are held to for the fencing, and if they're at standard, and then cattle break in, I think there's recourse for that. But FLIPMA, you know, with the says that there, it goes from the being helpers to takers, the BLM, and moves in that direction. And this I was talking about this Earth First as a radical environmental group. That's what Leah calls them. That started the No Moo in 92 and Cattle Free in 93, but it does have influence on, as far as how we're moving forward as a race here, race, we humans on this great big ball flying through space. You know, so helpers or takers, there's the mix. And back to Skater to Dave and my talking to him in a direct message over on Twitter. Great guy. I like him. He has, I hate to put labels, but let's say left and right, as far as spectrum, I would say he'd be, towards the middle from left, and most especially that, compliments to him and gratitude that he is willing to take a look and a listen. So he's seen value in this. And, Mike Stickler, thanks for that, tweet there. He said the, doing a good job in this coverage. And as far as I know, other than a little short commentary by Kelly and of course from Mike, get his book, Clive and Bundy, American Terrorist, or Terrorist or Hero. And at Bundy Strong on Facebook, I'm sorry, on Twitter. So let's see. So she moves on talking about the bomb, and that goes back to when Cliven was born in 19, I forgot what year he was born, 43. No, oh well. She says, anyways, yeah, go listen to her podcast and read her blog. Filter through this by all means. Because I don't think that anybody should be afraid of what anybody says. And I think, Matt, actually, that it should be courage for people to keep speaking up, especially if they're speaking against you, because eventually they're going to reveal themselves. And to me, it's quite obvious that the fear and loathing that led Leah on, and Ryan as her co-pilot or accompaniment, he might have been driving the Jeep. It's pretty interesting description of their journey out there anyways, definitely. And the how far out that is. It's, you know, it took them like 3 hours to make the 60-mile drive. They come upon the one horse hound of Bundyville, and in there she's talking about the names of some of the Bundys that have done some of the preservation. And you know, there's I think a couple of thousand at least descendants that gather for a family reunion there every year. So she's trying to there further degrade, dehumanize Cliven, and saying, oh, his name's not even on this thing about the deeds done up there. But you know, everybody has their place, and you know, not all 2,000 people's name is on there, if that'd be the correct number. But basically I think there's like one family left out there, and there was a time there was a great population there. And then we see how that changed. Like I can relate that here to excuse me, Arkansas, in that at one time, there was these communities here about, like, you know, I'm close to the plant community, and New Lexington down the road, and Bakkenberg, and then you get over across and down on the river, and there's towns that are townships that are no longer exist, like LB and Crossing the River, to, you know, low rotor crossings that are hardly ever used, and most of the river's been shut off by fences. And that's where the old railroad went through the northern Arkansas-Missouri line, or Missouri and North Arkansas. had gone through. So people were leaving rural America during that state, after, especially after World War II, and, you know, baby boomers would moving into the cities and going for the work. And, you know, they started building houses and selling them, you know, on installment plans. And, you know, all that stuff is coming new. Our America's that we see is quite a bit different than, well, even 30 years ago. So let's see here. All right. So after the BLM is seen by Cliven, as she says, to be going from helpers to takers, because he expected, you know, if you're paying fees, there ought to be some type of something to show for that. Now, the fees are mostly gobbled up, just like your income tax. It's gobbled up, and it doesn't go to anything to do with, you know, the operation of the government. It goes in paying this Ponzi scheme, the Federal Reserve, that prints money and charges interest. And so if you paid it all back, there would be no money left, and you'd still owe the interest. So we move on to Grandpa and baby animals. Well, first time I sat down across from Cliven back in 2014, and God bless you, you've gone back east, John Smith, alias, battling cancer. Man, God bless, brother. Good guy. We sit down, and a few of us, right in the very same spot where Jason Patrick was recording and put the bamboozer, where they took it, the racist comments, they call it, from Cliven. But anyways, in the very same spot there, and then later when the press turned back out for the coverage of that, and right there. Anyways, first time I sit down across from Cliven Bunny, and like she said, well, he's so grandpa-like, and that was exactly how I saw him. He reminds me physically, and the kindness in his face, in his character, of my grandpa, and that was my exact thoughts about him. She says they seem like simple folk, but this whatever it takes idea. She says they claim they have claims that bend the truth to suit them. I mean, they're not really this simple country folk, but very perhaps nefarious in what they're set out to do. People call them seditionists. It's pretty common in the Bundy cult following of the Paddies over there. I like to call them the Bundy cult. Like I said, I've been engaging with some folks, and it's been a turbulent relationship, I guess, in a way, in so many ways, and that a lot of abuse, verbal abuse, how they talk about the main people in the Bundy movement. They like to beat up on Kelly Stewart. I mean to ask her and John about these accusations from Melissa Lauders. She came out and shot a video one day I was gone, saying how they embezzled these donations, and Kelly built a goat barn, and John had this new kitchen. Well, John's now showed the kitchen floor that some people did donate specifically for him, and three, I think, different appliances, a couple of refrigerators and a stove. Big family he has. So I talked to both Kelly and John. When I came back the next day, I said, wow, that video made you guys look bad. And that was the purpose. And how do you answer accusations? And sometimes when, you know, it's just like it's a setup for the takedown. Again, like I was talking about earlier, these questions, to no bad questions. Well, sometimes the questions are rigged, right? But anyways, the evidence to me, beyond a doubt, of that they did not embezzle any funds for donations in this. At last conversation some months ago with him, I said they told me that they didn't want me to back them up on this, to fight for him. They felt it was better to ignore this sort of thing. Like I said, I'm very clear in, from documents and photographs that they were, you know, it's all on the up and up. Nobody's doing this. They call us, well, I'm not a grifter, but they didn't call me that. But anyways, I've called several people like Jamie Landon, for instance, this is a gas man, grifter. Jamie's done probably as much as anybody standing up to present as a witness the goings on in all of this. He and I were shooting a video at the same time, and it's in last week's blog too of the neigh horse, a horse goes neigh, but the neighbor, and also there was a white horse prophecy with Bram. We're setting up. We did that some time ago, setting up for this last week, or the week before. I'm sorry, I took off last week, but it'd be the last blog, and putting that forth. Now it talks about. I guess I'm skipping ahead a little bit. I'll back up. Let's see. So Dick Carver, that I was talking about, making a strong stand. He went out and bulldozed down back in the 90s. I guess it was some blockage of roads and you know that they closed down. So the what is this? Well, it takes a turn. That's what it is. I abbreviated it. The conversation takes a turn now. And she starts talking about Waco and recounts this. Now, this ended up, I was in the courtroom, inside the courtroom when this came out. They were fighting hard to try to bring to bear that they were surrounded. There were snipers and cameras and all this set up on them. And some of these intimidating calls were right. Received a call from one of the agents. So they got about half of the recordings up into the courthouse and the other half. And by the way, they declined or denied that these recordings even existed. It was a big, big fight. And Ryan Bundy, he read everything throughout. And Leah calls him, I think I get down to this a little bit, I'll get down to it. So they bring this out, and this agent, in part that they can't get released is, or they say it doesn't even exist, is you know, the threat to turn this into another Waco Ruby Ridge, and says how Cliven sits there like it's just a big, you know, it's all normal. This is life. It looks like that, you know, government was denying that, you know, they would have done. I there's no doubt in my mind they would have killed them had not all the folks come out from all over across the country to stand in a gap. So, is that normal? Well, it's normal, it seems, for Clive and his family. Carol told me one time, I said something about, you know, the probably recording around and stuff, more devices, more observation. And she said, oh, without a doubt. And, you know, they definitely have her phone bugged. And I'm quite certain they bugged my phone in Denver. And I hear this funny sound when I call certain people also. So I've been involved in that with a great many people. Yeah. She talked about in the next blog and the following. And goes further to dehumanize people, dregs, and disenfranchise people that came. Now, what do you get? How did they get to that point? Where did they become disenfranchised? And there was a lot of people looking for this to kick off. And like I was talking about the Millers that killed the two police in Las Vegas. And my cousin, he's now a detective, but he worked that area of town. And talking to one of the U.S. Marshals that knew the training officer that he had us back to the door, and the new guy, when you know, he didn't notice the threat, he didn't identify the threat when Jared Miller came in and went back up, came back in and walked up and shot the training officer in the back of the head and killed the other cop, and then they flew to flew off there towards Walmart. And, Jared had the gun and a carry, a concealed carry citizen, pulled a gun on him, and Amanda, his wife, walked up and shot him, killing him dead. And all ends a little later on in the back of Walmart with the shootout, and I guess it might have been murder-suicide at the end, and away they went. There's a lot inside that story, and a lot of things that other people know that would be very interesting to hear in all of that. Now, let's see where we're at. We go, as Cliven's listening and how this is all just normal, Ryan talks about LaVoy and how that they wished to silence these folks and that they could either be dead or behind bars. It really wasn't either way. And when you look at a list, and the special agent in charge, Dirty Dan Love, and all that's came out, the leaked video, the body cam, and all they're talking about shooting, as I think Ryan said it, as a woman that was overweight, killing a man's dog, and laughing this and that. So they had beads on, you know, they were ready to kill. And it's really by diligence that it didn't come to that. And a lot of that, I want to take some part of credit for when Jason Patrick and I were talking, and we had no idea that Ammon was listening. He listened to us to talk for a long time, and he came out and confided certain information to us. And we were talking about the possibility of the dark side coming out, and how so we passed around word person to person to anybody that looks like they're fixing to try to start some trouble, that we surround them and stop them. So we're not there to have a shootout. Yeah. Matter of fact, the standoff was by the feds there blocking the gate, and they were already supposed to be left. And that's what the sheriff Gillespie said, that he got word on his way out there the cattle were released, and you know, everything's good. And but they held off, and eventually they did leave. Dan Lowe said, "Give us 30 minutes, and we'll pack up and leave." I was talking about that last broadcast, crew, and there's a little song. I didn't include it from Wiley Freeman, and he didn't really like it too much, but I loved it. So the killing of LaVoy. Ryan says they had to take him out. He was that voice in the wilderness, in a sense, that those are my words. And they intended, I think, as Ryan says too, to take him out too. And so Leah asked him about the bullet, you know, because he was shot inside the truck. And they all ducked down, was under fire, Shauna Cox and Victoria Sharp and I said Shauna and Ryan. That's after LaVoy exited the truck and they shot him out there. Now, what I did here just a couple of days ago is I shot some video of a denim jacket with the very same type that LaVoy was wearing, with a 9mm pistol inside. A friend of mine open carries, and I said, "Hey, do me a favor. Let's get some shots here and some video of what a 9mm would look like." Now, I'd like to do it again. And one shot I missed was with the gun inside the jacket, the inner pocket, and the hands up. And that would have caused more pronunciation on the outline. Now, I still contend that he didn't have that 9mm in his pocket, and I think it was planted. This Astoria, this ass up in Portland, he's on trial for lying and covering up and stuff, and you know, they fleeced their shells. It was a big cover-up conspiracy, and there's no doubt about that. So I do believe they planted that gun after they killed him, and there was a lot of speculation that that was not his actual gun, but it was. And as I was told in way back when from Tom that, yeah, he did have a 9mm, because people were saying he don't even have a 9mm. He's got a six shooter on his hip. But undoubtedly, that pistol, I think, was recovered out of the truck and then planted. I really do. But I don't think that there's any evidence that there was a gun inside his denim jacket. I call that denim jacket now. I call it a Lavoie. And I have one just like it. And so I've been waiting to get back, and then somebody that has a gun to help me demonstrate that. So about, why did I say 2 hours in? The neighbor, that's 9 hours. Well, she goes on back into the neighbor, and I covered that in the last broadcast, and talking about the duty of members of the LDS Church, and then coming from the 12th article of faith, which would be, I think, doctrines and covenants, yes. As I open-ended question from Nay, which was one of Clive and Bundy's neighbors and friends and fellow out of the Book of Mormon and of the Doctors and Covenants and other writings from some of their prophets in their church, and they bring it all together and talking about what the duty of a member of the Latter-day Saints is as far as standing up for the Constitution to preserve it, and government and so forth. And Ryan answered it also talking about the White Horse Prophecy. So as I talked about last week without, just going all the way back over it, there's nothing here in this Naybook or the White Horse Prophecy that other than what some people might call commentary or, a study of their religion. But it doesn't say to, to go be seditious and kill and all that stuff, but to defend law. So there's another convolution that she takes and calls it the dark side, and stories of desperation and violence and hate groups and this willingness to die to make the government look bad. So there's quite a bit. What did I pass? Anything? Back over here. Yeah. As start working out towards the end, we are the change that counts. And that goes back into what I was talking about on millennials. The problem is that when we get so buried in any doctrinal or belief, then we are very much blind to much else going on around us. And that applies to anybody. I hope to be the least guilty of that. And my pondering, my gandering out is, I go through the Twitter sphere and engage with these people and try to be honest. And I have to say that the language is at least it's improving in our conversation. And as we're meeting like barks at cats and barks at cows and barks at cows and his master talk about, he's from Burns. He said how it was such a disruption and lots of fear and angst and financial hardship for the town and when they came. Everybody has a different idea. And for me to say that he is wrong in his opinion, I would be wrong to say that because that's how he sees it. That's where he was at. And that's how he felt it affected him. So we can't just disregard others in our truth. Truth is subjective. But I meant to have that down actually back in some point. I think I left it out. But truth as absolute. Now, there are certain absolute truths, but a belief does not make a truth absolute by any means. Pretty much, I think I have some more notes here, but I think I'll leave them out. And I think mostly that does that. Let me think if any more. I've talked about maybe this upcoming interview with Bill Fulton, Schaefer Cox, Ordeal up there in Alaska. Now they say that it was really a big setup, so I'll be interested in seeing, because I know probably as much about, or well, just barely more about Schaefer Cox than I did about Bruce Doucette before heading up to Denver and that. And again, a big shout out to Skater Dude. I really, really appreciate your engagement and your honesty and the knowledge and wisdom that you have. And your perspective is quite interesting. And I so agree in so many ways. I know people would assume that Vinny the Poot is a far right winger, and I am absolutely not. I have so much in common in ideology with Leah Sotelli and Ryan Zahas. You know, we're not enemies, and I hope that even though through being cheeky as I am with that you read there, I just had fun with that beginning of the broadcast on this fear and loathing that led them on. But it is true. And please just admit that this is your opinion, and you want to drive the narrative, because to me it's pretty obvious that maybe you should check it out for yourself and give it a good listen, and it will be in the blog. And so how's it? Any questions? Anybody out there listening? And Frumpy, did I clarify enough on the read and the thing going on up there on that land?
A couple of comments here. Randy Kibble says, the illusion being presented as true and what some people will do to protect it.
Right.
And then Free Enslaved wants to know if this is a sealed case.
There's still a lot of stuff sealed. The second part of the Wooten letter, the memo, who now that, you know, the Patties are trying to claim, oh, he's a disgruntled worker, you know, but he came out with a lot, with all this information about the kill list and, you know, how he was fired by the AUSA 3 as the lead investigator off of that, because he was in, you know, Myrie told him, look, don't ask, don't tell is basically what we're looking at here, at these indiscrepancies by the law enforcement end of the operation headed up by Dan Levin. And I believe I quoted, what's her name last, when she was the head of the, I think the U.S. Forest Service law enforcement agency in the region. And she was on the stand in Las Vegas also. Definitely illusion that you're trying to maintain, Randy. Absolutely. Any questions, Grimner? Can I clarify on anything?
No, people are talking about it, you know, saying about the drone footage is there. It should have been an open and shut case of murder. Cowards never want to be held accountable. Gauntlet all the way down the road. Nice to bleed out in the freezing snow in the middle of bumfuck. Having guns in the truck or on his hip is not relevant. It's just straw man. Frumpy said four shooters locked on him, and he could have had two holsters. Who cares? He wasn't getting a shot off even if he tried. And let's see here.
Yeah.
Other similar comments like that. But yeah, you got people conversating about it all. And Rip.
Yeah, LaVoy. They opened fire. That's come out. They opened. And Rip.
Rip LaVoy.
It came out. Well, rest in peace. Yes, definitely. And it did come out. It's come out that they opened fire on the truck as they came out. You see in the drone footage where that one cop jumps out like he's trying to you know, get hit on purpose.
Right.
When LaVoie took the snowbank. But the whole intent was to riddle them to death, and there's no doubt in my mind that they intended to kill everybody inside that truck. There's providence has led so much in, throughout all of this that, and I think LaVoie did sacrifice himself. Angie Bundy, when I first came out with this with Melissa Lauder, MD Lauder, that you know, I came out as some garnering some respect for me, and it really, that was one of those hurting things. She sent me a message, you know, align yourself how you will, and she told me some of this stuff, you know, like Melissa was ready to testify that LaVoie was suicidal, and that willing to lay down your life is not the same thing as suicidal. He said, you know, he had premonition that he would be killed. So, you know, was it a self-fulfilling prophecy? I think it was definitely helped along by the agents of the state. Crimes of the State is a hashtag I've used a lot in the past. You need to bring that back. And like I said, with Bill Fulton and Schaefer Cox, it would be a very interesting story. Of course, you know, Bill's presentation, his narrative of the events would certainly be would show in his favor. But I hope to sort through that and give them a fair shake. Like I say, I think we should encourage people to continue to speak and search it out. Absolutely. Oh, and a play on the screenwriting. Just like a screen in football, you know, a pass. There is in this writing that we're getting from Leah, it's definitely a smokescreen and a diversion away from truth and illusion that comes out of that smoke. And thanks, Randy. That is the illusion, and that is what they're pushing forward. And why the mainstream is still pursuing this attack towards the Bundys, and why? Because it's not over, and people are doing whatever it takes to try to bring the clear evidence of crimes of the state and being vilified for it. Pick and choose over there as they make their condemnation. Personally, from living out there, I lived in Moapa Valley, and my grandma, she became a Mormon. I knew a lot of Mormons, and I'm going to tell you, as far as people in religion, in churches or whatever, Mormons are more consistently good people, if I can just say it like that. And the Bundys, that all that I've seen in them, that they also exhibit goodness. And it's Americana, this old regime, that they're another part of the regime change and the ideology and the education system is, you know, it's been for decades now pumping this in into the mind thought of the population. So, you know, in my attack or redress of Leah and her production, I'm not against y'all personally, and I just ask for honesty, because we're not getting that. Absolutely not. You're layering this portrait. You're building it up and to make it a three-dimensional view that is so tainted by your ideology that to me it's quite obvious. And like I said, there's a lot of things that we'd agree on. Some of these places need some protection, but to say that cattle are the cause and the decline of anything out there is definitely, well, it's mostly not true. Some estuaries, some certain very sensitive areas should maybe be excluded and fenced off to keep that certain amount of resource there just for the other little critters that could go under or over the fence. And So there's validity in some of that environmentalism that comes straight out from the line.
You're losing signal or something, man.
Yeah, I see that over there. It pittered or puttered. See if it comes back. Would you like to say anything and close this out, Grimner?
I would, actually. I want to share something that you may be familiar with. It's a writing by a certain group of people. Just part of it, just the beginning parts. And I think it's relevant. So here you go. Too many slaves in this world die by torture and pain. Too many people do not see. They're killing themselves, going insane. Too many people do not know. Bondage is over the human race. They believe slaves always lose, and this fear keeps them down. Watch the damned. They're going to break their chains. No, you can't stop them. They're coming to get you. And then you'll get your balls to the wall, man.
That's tonight. Are you all the way balls to the walls tonight, or is Misty coming along?
Freakers tonight, but the lyrics from that song that I use on that when I do that show, very, very pertinent to what's going on around the world. People listen to that song and understand those lyrics that, hey, that's a very positive message for y'all, and a bad one.
And you said before that the balls to the walls were not your own.
They are not your own. It's their balls that you're putting to the wall. They got to back up until they get their balls to the wall, and that's where they get smashed down. Because you're coming to get them. You're part of the slaves, the damned. You're coming after them. Yeah, just read.
That's the world we live in.
Just read through the lyrics on that song, man, and you'll understand.
Yeah, so I'll bring that in. I sent you the first part of this in an email there for my blog, but I wanted to add to it and update that with some of this other stuff that I was talking about and include that. So if you don't care, you can start the blog off with that right there, and then I'll come back with the edit. And that'll be the start, if that's cool.
Well, it's your blog. You do it how you like, man.
All right. Print that right there, what I sent you, and then I'll come back with an addendum and revision.
Well, I'll wait till you get it together, and then I'll put it up.
Okay. All righty. Well, I will be working on that. I appreciate everybody tuning in. And if you've listened this long, Ryan, say hi. Respond.
Yeah.
Leah, you too.
All right.
All right, brother.
Peace.
Peace. We're out. Later. Thank you.